Welcome back, gamers, and we are back with another installment of the Uninformed Gamers Podcast, and I am one of your hosts, and back with a vengeance. It is me, it is Mason, from Rad Dreams Review, and joining me, as always, are my two wonderful co-hosts. We have Darkness Tiger, also known as Devin.
That's me. Good to see you again, Mason.
Yes, it's always good to be seen. And then to round us off is the ever-so-awesome Chris, a.k.a. iChameleon I.
What's up?
Hey. Brother. It's been a while. I apologize for my absence as well, and I apologize to the listeners as well for my absence. It has been a while.
Your absence has been duly noted. We missed you. We're glad you're back in good health. And based off available information, you're going to be with us for a hot minute. You will have a lot of free time ahead of you.
Yes, and I can give a brief update before we dive into our main topics today, in terms of, you know, things that I've been going into with gaming as well as IRL things. So in the gaming front, I have decided to punish myself once again and beat Divinity Original Sin 2 for the Xbox on Honor Mode. So now this marks the final system that I've beaten that game on.
I hope this game does not come out on anything else. I hope this is finally
well,
done.
If it does, I probably won't play it on anything else because I've beaten it for PC, Xbox, Switch, and PlayStation. So four systems. And I don't think I'll ever get a PS5, so...
Fair. Have you exhausted all dialogue?
I mean, I've beaten the game as every character. Which is fine because I wanted to experience everybody's story and everything like that. When we talk about dialogue options, hell no, there's way too many. Like, and I'm not that much of a masochist to do that, so. So I won't be experiencing every single possible dialogue option in that game. Hell no. So my next goal is to get a PC that can better handle Baldur's Gate. So I can really dive into that more because currently my laptop can't handle it. Or at least not well. But that's one game I really want to play because I played the open beta with my potato computer, and I loved it, even though it couldn't run it at its full power, which says a lot about the game, in my opinion.
For sure.
So other than that, the two other games that I've been messing around with is this one for Game Pass on Xbox called Sea of Stars.
I downloaded that.
You wouldn't like it, Devin, because it's turn-based.
I'm out. Y'all keep talking. So,
automatic turn-off. But it's a JRPG. It is basically a giant love letter to Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross from way back. Yeah, from way back in the day. So it is, you know, it pays homage to that very much. So the combat is very dynamic, even though it is turn-based. You have to manage your cooldowns and your characters, as well as be strategic with how you attack your enemies. The graphics are 16-bit or 32-bit, but it's sprite, you know, sprite graphics. Very, very reminiscent of old school JRPGs. The soundtrack is just chef's kiss. I want to say the original guy who did the soundtrack for Chrono Trigger did this soundtrack. I want to say, but I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that. I could be just talking out of my ass. But if you are a JRPG fan, I highly recommend Sea of Stars. There's a lot of content in there for you to do. And you will have an absolute blast with the game. Very, very good. And then the other game, obviously, has been Starfield.
Hey!
I have to be honest, though. I've only played it for roughly 2 hours. So far, one of those hours was dedicated to creating my character. and then the other hour was, like, gameplay. But so far, I'm enjoying the ride. It's a fun game, and I'm very happy to play more of it. And then other games dabbling here and there is like Slay the Spire on Xbox. It's a very fun game. It's like basically how long you can survive sort of game. And what else? I think that's it for gaming. And then for IRL news, as Devin hinted to at the beginning of the episode of my free time, the reason for that is, as the listeners know, I am a auto worker. I work for Ford Motor Company at a assembly plant in Ohio. And I don't, for those of you listening, I'm sure you're very well aware of the news that the UAW/Big Three may go on strike because no agreement for the new contract has been reached. And the Big Three has until midnight tonight to reach an agreement. And if they do not, the Big Three UAW will go on strike. But there is a big asterisk attached to that. I can go into that more if you guys are curious.
Yeah, I actually am curious. Tell us a little bit more.
Yeah. All right. So the president of the UAW goes by the name of Sean Fain. And leading up to this whole contract negotiation, he has issued out the dialogue of, oh, hey, if you know we don't reach an agreement, all three big automakers will go on strike. You know, GM, Ford, Chrysler, right? And this has been the dialogue for the whole thing. I just found out literally yesterday that instead of doing that, Sean, you know, Fain, he wants to do what I call targeted striking or segmented striking. And from his perspective, as well as the union perspective, this approach does make sense because we have the UAW has a limited strike fund that that could last roughly 11 weeks, maybe 12 if we're pushing it. And his strategy is to, instead of us all going at once to segment, because if we all go at the same time, we will bleed through that strike fund money very, very quickly, you know, a lot faster than 11 weeks, right? So what his current strategy is, he wants to target like part plants that supply parts to different assembly plants, right? To kind of force the company to implement layoffs instead of us going on strike. So there's a potential for employees in certain states to collect unemployment instead of collecting the strike fund, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say certain states is because not all states will be eligible for this. Because if a plant, like if an assembly plant gets shut down due to a strike, you are not eligible to collect unemployment.
Interesting.
So there are certain states that exist in the United States that are part of this ecosystem that if this does happen, if they get shut down because of a strike, they will not be able to collect unemployment. So if that's the case, they, for lack of a better word, are screwed because not only can they not collect unemployment money, they cannot collect strike fund money because they won't be on strike. They'll be on layoff.
Yeah.
So his plan has its pros and cons. I can't really comment on what I think is the right move. Ideally, I don't want to strike. Who does? Striking is a last ditch effort. But, you know, it is a needed one, right? I recognize the importance of striking and I support it, but nobody is going to be like, oh yeah, I want to strike. Yeah, fuck yeah. Because it hurts you. It hurts you financially. It hurts your families. So ideally you don't want to do that. You want companies to be good, but unfortunately we exist in a world where companies are not good and are greedy.
True.
Mainly at the top.
Shit.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into greedy companies with our very first story.
Yeah.
But I did see an interview with the president of the UAW. And he framed it like this. He says that all the pundits, all the analysts, all the news that says that if we strike, the economy is going to collapse. Everything's going to fall apart.
No, I disagree with that.
And that's what he said. He says that notice how in the last 3 months, or not the last 3 months, up until September, the three major auto manufacturers have made a profit of $21 billion.
Yes. And the CEOs have increased their pay since last contract by 40%.
Exactly. By 40%. 40%. And he get this, Chris, the price.
And that's across the board.
And the price of cars has gone up 30%. But what has not gone up has been the wages of the worker.
So even if, and so this is an argument, and I don't want to turn this into a automotive podcast at this juncture, but what people fail to realize when they speak on this and say, oh, you strikers are going to cause these cars to go up in price, that's not the case. We, as the workers who are striking, are not causing this. The companies are. The executives are, by not implementing or giving us a fair contract, right? They're the ones causing this, not us. They're forcing us to battle them for our fair share, and which I believe we deserve, honestly.
Yeah. Agreed. And literally what the fair. Auto executives Absolutely. Have been doing is they have been only pushing the most high margin vehicles. The
fact yes.
that the Cadillac Escalade, ESV, Cadillac's bread and butter now, starts off around $86,000. And you can see dealerships filled with this. The Ford, let's look at the F-150 as an example. There's dealerships full of F-150s that start at $56,000. Mm-hmm. But they can't make enough of the Ford Maverick.
And here's another part of my language, another fucked up part. If a Ford, or not even Ford, if a automotive worker can't afford what they make, that's a fucking problem.
Yep. That makes no sense. You cannot True. Buy the product you make.
That's True. Which is ridiculous.
So we'll
and then like
updated on that, but that's just an awful situation.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll say on that is, people also tend to forget, even the current CEO, Farley, who, by the way, strangely enough, is the cousin of Chris Farley,
rest
who knew. Rest in peace, Chris.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. So unfortunately, this guy's worse than Chris. But but anywho, he, as well as the other executives, tend to forget the automotive crisis when they needed to be bailed out by the U.S. government. Right. So during that time frame, Ford was the only automaker in the United States not to accept a bailout from the government, and were the only people who actually made concessions during contract negotiations to accept less and less and less, just so they could keep the products, afloat. Right. And I think they forget that we made that sacrifice.
No, but we'll keep you guys posted.
But yeah, I will definitely, next episode, I'll keep you guys updated with what happens if you don't see it in the news first. And before we move on, what have you two been up to?
Chris, feel free to go take the lead on that one.
I've actually been on vacation, so I was in Florida, so I didn't get to play as many games as I'd would have liked to have. So nothing really to update on my side.
So how was Florida for you, Chris?
It's great. It's hot. It was like, it was like a minimum of 90 every day. So yeah, bright skies, sun shining, hot, just straight up hot.
Did it rain at all?
No, not while we were there. No, it rained. It rained while we were on the plane, getting our stuff. But as soon as we came out, the skies were clear, and then they were clear for the next 4 or 5 days.
Because I know Florida's known for you know, pretty inclement weather.
Yeah, yeah. It'll like it'll just run over you in a like a second, and then clear skies will hit you, and you're like, oh, nice. But yeah, it's it was pretty damn nice.
Nice, and now you're back in Ohio.
Yeah, I arrived in Ohio, and it was like 60, 70.
yeah, that's so, it's so wild that it's like mid-September, and it's getting fairly cold.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Like, it was actually pretty damn cold this morning when I woke up. I was like, oh, man, it's freezing.
And speaking of, this will be a fun little transition, but before we move on to the main topic today, we have Devin joining back after his technical difficulties.
Talk about technical difficulties. Man, this internet, I need to improve it. It literally dropped midway through sentence, so my apology, guys. Where was
no worries. So the last thing I heard was that you were in Montreal, Canada. And then you played Starfield.
Yep. So I did an edible last night and landed on a moon and was just wandering around, found me a little base. I even found a space suit that when you crouch and you stop, it makes you go invisible.
That's kind of cool.
What?
That's the beauty of this game. I've just been finding stuff. So like I have this like long distance shotgun. So I took on this entire base by myself and would just like whenever somebody would see me, I would just stop. They would just walk past. I would just
go invisible.
It was so
that
much fun.
Is funny.
And since this planet had low gravity and I had my jetpack, I could just fly. And I was just flying over and just shooting people with shotguns. It was a lot of fun.
Nice.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to dive deeper in that.
Me too.
You have to play it. I'm disappointed in both of you that I'm the one who's gotten the furthest in this.
I just haven't been here.
Oh, well, if I end up going on strike, I'll have plenty of time.
All right, we'll play together. Well, at least we can't play together. We'll play on the same microphone.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. Do some Discord.
Discord. But all right, let's get into our first topic. And that has to do with scummy companies and arguably one of the biggest companies of all time. Let's talk about Google.
Yes.
Google is currently being sued by the United States for being quote unquote too big.
And now, this is a long time coming.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. This has been a building for quite a while. And what the United States argument is that Google has reached a point where it's a search engine that no one else in the search engine sphere can compete.
No.
And what has been discovered during this is that Google will actually pay Apple to make Google the default search browser on Apple. It will make the default search browser for Mozilla Firefox as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so Google's whole argument is, well, we're not the best. It's just that consumers prefer to use us to the competition. And the United States argument is you're doing the exact same thing that Microsoft did in the 90s. You are stifling competition. Mm-hmm. You're not allowing competition to actually grow because you're paying outside companies to ensure that they are not going to be put as the default. And I think they use Bing as an example.
Yes, they do. So speaking on this piece as well, according to Verge.com, they want to use Bing as like their punching bag, so to speak. And Bing will have 10 weeks of testimony, which
Man,
is pretty
is
good.
Brutal. Well, what Bing said, basically what Microsoft, which who owns Bing, has basically said is that we cannot develop a search engine to be as competitive as Google because we do not have nearly enough traffic to develop that.
True.
And it's not just the search engine part of this as well. It also has to do with advertisement. Because Google is so large, what they've discovered is that Google can basically charge whatever it wants for advertisement.
Mm-hmm.
Again, stifling the competition. So though the U.S. did not necessarily have an argument when it came to the Activision Blizzard Microsoft one, I think there's any argument, I think this is the one that could be made.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Google is actually arguing. Here's what the, again, going back to The Verge from Mason. Mm-hmm. The Department of Justice wants Judge Amit Mehta to focus on what Google did, which in its evaluation is signed a bunch of restrictive Google search exclusive agreements with Apple, Mozilla, and Android manufacturers. Google is arguing that the whole trial is a gift to Microsoft, which again, in its
evaluation,
has dismally failed to compete with Google on search.
You know, so I'm going to draw some lines here. Bear mm-hmm. with me.
Draw them in the sand. Draw
yeah,
in the
no,
sand.
Please.
We're going to make some connections. Doesn't this sound very familiar to what Sony's been doing with by keeping like games off of like mm-hmm. Xbox and like, doesn't that sound oddly familiar?
But you know what's even funnier than that, Chris?
What? That it's not working?
Google just... No, Sony and Google just did what Microsoft did in the 90s.
Right.
So this is also very reminiscent. So this is before any of our time, but maybe we have some listeners that can remember this in the 1980s. Do you guys remember or ever hear of the Bell system?
It sounds familiar. Give us some more information on that.
All right. So back in the wee days of the 1980s, as possibly even before then, there existed phone companies under one massive umbrella called the Bell system, right? And this system was controlled by AT&T, right? And these companies were 9X, and some of these don't exist anymore. We have Pacific Telesis, Ameritech, Bell Atlantic, Southern Bell Corp, Bell South, and US West. So in 1984, I want to say, these quote-unquote seven Bells were broken up into different companies because at the time, this Bell system was a monopoly because they controlled so much of the market when it came to phone service. And basically, Google is doing a very similar thing as this Bell system. To give more context before we move on, is the case began in 1974 and it ended in 1984. So it took 10 years for this to even be broken up, which is nutty. But other than that, I can't think of like a good parallel to Google other than what you just said, Chris, with the Sony thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, what do you guys think of that, I guess, phone system being broken up and segmented?
Well, I think we have to look at that there was a different time back then.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, corporations were considered and still seen as the bad guys. Whereas mm-hmm. now, we've allowed corporations to kind of run rampant in whatever they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I do see the similarities, but I think that because of the time period we currently live in, I don't necessarily think that that's an argument that can really be made. Because mm-hmm. we've seen there's monopolies happening left and right that nobody seems
yes.
to
think. Yeah.
True.
And even with phone companies, even nowadays, we're seeing almost a recursion of just, for lack of a better word, monopolies. Even with AT&T again.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I do find, on this Verge article, I do find something very interesting. So there are two interesting things about this. The judge, Amit Mehta, asked when Google became a monopoly, and government attorney Kenneth Dinser said Google has been illegally maintaining its monopoly since 2010, meaning it's been a monopoly even longer than that. And Dinser said in response to another question that he believes fully half of Google searches come through a paid-for spot in a search bar. So yes. because of that money that Google is giving to these companies, 50% of that is driving the traffic to Google.
Like yeah, and if you, I think this was during the congressional trial for, oh my God, I forget what it was, but basically the first page of a Google search, it is where your company lives or dies, right? A vast majority, I would even argue, this is a made up figure, but I would argue like 90% of people who use Google click on, you know, a link on the first page. I very rarely would you click page two. I would argue that.
No, I would never. If it's not on the first page, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. So you're basically banished to the shadow realm, to use a Yu-Gi-Oh term. But no, you bring up a good point, Devin, with the paid ad spots on Google. You know, having that top, the number one, number two. I don't know how much money they charge for that, but I assume it's pretty substantial.
Well, imagine, because if you have an iPhone, you could literally open up your Safari browser and literally type in whatever you want to the search bar. Just do not add .com to it. Mm-hmm. So I just typed in the word Apple. Obviously, I have an Apple iPhone. I just type in the word Apple. And the very first thing that comes up when I type it into the Safari search bar, it goes straight to Google. That's one. Mm. And the very first thing is obviously Apple.com, because who is going to pay the highest amount of money for the word Apple?
Not, oh, yeah.
Fruit.
But no,
the company,
obviously.
Then the next preceding things are all Apple, like Apple the company, Apple debuts, Apple Inc., Apple iPhone 15. So Apple is clearly making quite a lot of money off this deal, because what is people, if you search the word Apple, you could be looking for the fruit, and the first thing you're going to get is the company.
Mm-hmm.
So true.
Yeah, you could want maybe some sort of recipe. I don't know.
Yeah, just type in, I have a bunch of apples. What can I make with apples? And the first thing that's going to come up is Apple iPhone.
It's like, did you mean the phone?
Did you mean the... So, like, let me just type in just Apple ingredients. It has to specify fruit. It's like, did you mean fruit?
Did you mean fruit? Wow.
Yeah, so... I absolutely do see that there is an argument that could be made here. Google might actually be too big, because at one point it was considered that Google is now a verb.
Mm-hmm.
God, get
yeah,
away.
Yeah, no, it kind of is a verb, because like, oh, yeah, why don't Google you it. Want? Yeah, go Google it.
Google it.
So when I was younger, and you two can attest to this as well as some of our listeners, is. Growing up in school, when we were probably in like fifth, sixth grade, we started using the internet, I would argue, especially at school. We use search engines like Ask Jeeves.
Yep.
Oh, I remember Ask Jeeves.
Ask Jeeves, Yahoo. There was other ones that I can't really think off the top of my head, but like Wikipedia. Is technically a search engine, kind of ish.
Didn't MSN also have a search engine?
I believe so. I can't recall what it was.
Yeah, I think AOL, MSN also had one. So it was a much bigger.
Yeah, it was broader. Yeah, it was a broader field of search engines that you could, you know, use back in the day. So, I mean, do you guys, before we move on to our next scummy company topic, do you believe that Google is a monopoly and should be broken up?
I say if any company is currently existing as a monopoly, Google would be the first name that would come to mind.
Mm. Yeah, I would say Google. Yeah. If we're looking at strictly the search engine function of how they're controlling that, absolutely. That's ridiculous.
It is full takeover of the market.
I'm inclined to agree as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's move over to our next story. And this story you guys are gonna have to bring me, because I'm unfamiliar with this one.
All right. Yes. So our next story is about Unity, right? Yes. To give a brief Unity, and not the character from Rick and Morty, if anybody remembers that character. But so to give a brief overview of what Unity is, Unity is a cross-platform game engine developed by Unity Tech. It was announced in 2005. And basically what it does is provides developers with a 2D and 3D platform to create video games. Basically, it's very similar to like an Unreal Engine, just not as powerful, right? It's a simple engine. And it uses, I believe the programming language it uses is C++. Other than that, I don't know too much else about like what exactly it does. Maybe you can extrapolate on that, Chris.
The only thing I can really add about it, I've heard that developers find it a little bit easier to learn mm-hmm. and to work in. So like they would say that Unreal Engine has a steeper learning curve mm-hmm. compared to Unity. But they say once you get Unreal Engine, you got it, or, you know, you're good to go.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, it takes a little bit. It may take a little bit longer to get there, a little bit rougher. But
Can I say which games Unity yeah, is developed?
Yeah, of course. Go ahead.
You have Genshin Impact. You have Pokemon Go, Hollow Knight Silksong, Cult of the Lamb, and Among Us, as well as Rust 2.
And Slay the Spire.
Yeah.
And this would also include games that have not been released yet.
Yes.
Yes.
And old games.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into specifically what Unity, the company,
yes.
did.
So
it's putting them in the news.
Yeah, so basically, according to Reuters, or Routers, however you pronounce it, .com, and this is from yesterday, so September 13th, we are finding out that the company itself is fairly unprofitable, and they are facing some challenges, so to speak. And so they're trying to navigate a way to circumvent these difficulties. So what do they do? The first thing that comes to their mind is to impose fees on video game developers after certain revenue and install thresholds are met, which has obviously elicited a very harsh response on social media. So much so that the creator of Cult of the Lamb is threatening to, or not, I don't even think he's threatening. I think he's actually going to do it at this point. He's going to delete Cult of the Lamb off of Steam.
I heard that. I was like, holy shit, he's not playing around.
No.
And that game was incredibly popular.
Yes, and it's still very popular. And even Slay the Spire, they are kind of courting with the idea of removing it from Xbox.
Yep.
So what is the specific reason as to why? It's not every single game.
No.
Unity said is that they are going to charge game developers a 20-cent fee for every new installation after 200,000 units,
which is absurd.
Which, if you sell a million copies, if people install a million copies, then you're kind of paying 20% of 800,000, $160,000 to the Unity just to use their engine,
which
I'm sure you've already paid for,
right?
Yeah, because you have to have the license.
And what makes matters even worse, I was saying through the comments of this particular story and I was just investigating, someone brought up a great point.
Mm-hmm.
They said, let's look at Among Us as an example. Among Us, millions upon millions of people have downloaded this. It's on the people's phones. It's on the consoles. It's everywhere you look. It's on Switch.
It's free.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's on Switch.
I mean, look at Genshin, Pokemon Go. Those games are fucking massive.
I believe Genshin was the highest selling game of all time at one point. But someone brought up a great point. They said, okay, so what happens if I download it, install it on my phone, delete the installation,
and then do it again? Yep. They would have to pay for that.
And then that can create so much problems, especially, again, looking at Among Us because the game is free. Okay, you just have a group of bots and a-holes who just don't like Among Us, who are just going to just uninstall, 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 uninstall.
Yeah, it creates a very vicious cycle.
Yes. And what's his name? think about the subscription services. Let's look at let's look at PlayStation Network. Let's look at Game Pass. All of those games just being on the subscription, if they're on the Unity platform, someone could just download it anytime that they want. And it was so funny. So Unity backtracked on this and they were like, well, we wouldn't make for Game Pass and PlayStation Network, we wouldn't make the game developer pay for it. We'll make PlayStation or Xbox pay for it. And everyone's like, yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah. Good luck.
Microsoft and PlayStation's lawyers would take you to the fucking town. Like,
yes, they would.
Knowing Microsoft, Microsoft would just buy Unity and then fire the guy who put this policy in place.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Sony is so petty. Sony'd be like, we don't have Unity games on this console.
They would freaking eviscerate them.
Yes. All right. Funny thing that you mentioned, the CEO. All right. So the Unity CEO is John Riccitiello or something like that. He was the EA CEO.
It always goes back to EA.
He said he said last year he said this last just last year he said devs making games without monetization in mind are fucking idiots. When he was an EA stock, like in an EA stockholder meeting, he entertained the idea of charging $1 to reload an ammo clip in Battlefield.
Wow. No, he
didn't. That is absolutely true, and that is 100% real.
Wow.
So now I don't feel bad that it is.
And that reminds me of another thing. All right, so there was another thing I read. I think it might have been the CEO as well, or it was an executive at Unity. So there was an article, I believe it was on Kotaku or another site, but it stated that an executive, possibly the CEO, don't quote me on this, they sold their shares of this stock 2 weeks before this happened.
I heard the executives did that.
Yeah,
you know it's bad when you are like, I know we haven't done this announcement yet, but let's sell our stocks before we do, because this is not going to go well with anybody.
Nope. So they are going to be fined and arrested at the wazoo for insider trading.
Yep.
Oh, yes. Now, to make matters worse, because this policy is so unpopular, today Unity has to close their offices after receiving death threats over this installation fee policy.
Wow.
To the point where they're getting the police, I believe it was in San Francisco, mm-hmm. they're getting the police involved in their San Francisco and Austin offices because they believe these threats are credible. Mm-hmm. And quite a few developers are threatening to switch their engines, and some are even going to delete their games entirely. Games that are currently being made, games that currently exist, they are like, we will not have any part of this policy.
Yeah, good for them. So, but with the exception of the death threat part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If nothing happens on, I believe, January 1st, 2024, this Unity policy will go into play.
Wow.
Do you think Unity is going to back off and say, we made a mistake, we were kidding, LOL, sorry guys, here's a free game? Or do you think that they're going to go the way of Netflix and just kind of say, well, we're going to barrel through and whatever happens, happens?
This is tough. So they've kind of already tarnished their reputation. And so it's really hard to come back from something like this, like really hard, because you had good faith from your consumers, which is the like engineers and the game developers. But then you just, with a policy, you immediately took all of that. It like, you just took it all away and made it so basically you made it feel like the engineers have to pay this outrageous price to like to just use your engine when they could go use another engine. So like, it's really hard to come back from that. And a lot of game companies, like they like, if they're big enough, they'll be like, okay, next game we're just on a different engine. And we'll just delist our game and cleanse yourself.
That'll be that.
Then you can't touch us. Like, and then the ones in the worst situation are the companies like that are like kind of starting up and they're making a game for the first time, using the engine for the first mm-hmm. time. That sucks because they're in the middle of making the game, haven't made any profit, nothing. And then if they have to switch that really hurts, especially if they're going to have to learn a whole nother tool set, because like I said previously, Unreal Engine's totally different. It's going to be incredibly hard to recover from this. They're already backtracking. They're all over the place right now. I don't know what's going to come of this, but this is tough.
It's a messy situation, 100%. And I hate to piggyback off of you, Chris, but I mean, what I wanted to say was essentially in line with what you were saying, with the exception of I don't know if they will backtrack, and I obviously don't know if they will go through with it, because here's the problem with Unity. They are not as big as someone like Netflix. They are a software company. They're only worth, I want to say, like $14 billion or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's going to be tough for them to do either or, right? Like you said, they damaged their rep. So if they go through with it, I think that's basically career suicide for them. I think if they end up implementing this policy, they will go under. If they decide, hey, we fucked up and apologize and don't implement it, I think they'll struggle for a little bit, but ultimately will bounce back at some point. But there is that opportunity, because I think the consumers will, after a while, forget or forgive or whatever the case may be. But the best move for them is to not go through with this. That is my opinion.
Yeah.
See, I see both sides here. And by the negative side, I see it like this. If I was a developer who was building a game off Unity, the first thing I would say is, okay, I do no longer trust you.
Mm-hmm.
I no longer wish to continue a relationship knowing that you can make this decision at any moment's notice. So that would automatically put me on the back burner of working with Unity going forward, and even dealing with any projects, as I know this company can go ahead and do a left turn. Mm-hmm. So I would already, if it was my company, I would say, okay, let's finish up our current Unity projects, but I'm going to need y'all to start learning the new software, because we have to move away from this.
Mm-hmm.
But on the plus side, I guess for the consumer, if this policy is not going to be applicable to Xbox Game Pass or Sony PSN or whatever, PlayStation Plus, it's probably going to push more developers into, specifically Unity developers, into trying to get their games on those kind of softwares
mm-hmm.
exclusively, just so they can avoid ever having to pay that fee. Sony and Microsoft will give them a sizable chunk of money, and they never have to pay Unity anything. So it's kind of I don't know if about a win-win, because there's still the debate about how much money companies make by having their games on Game Pass and PlayStation Plus, but at least it's an option for them.
Right.
So speaking of how much of a win-win it is for having a game on Game Pass, Starfield.
Yes.
So one thing people at Mason, we talked about in the last episode, is how the reviews for Starfield are all over the place. A lot of people are saying, oh, the game is terrible. It's just Fallout and Skyrim in space. Some people are saying this is the next coming of Jesus. However, no matter your opinion, whether you think the game is good or whether you think it's bad, doesn't matter. Apparently, Starfield is a console seller.
Yes.
I
can speak on that specifically firsthand. I have a lot of my coworkers who know that I'm a gamer, and they've come up to me and they're like, "Hey, I heard about this game called Starfield. What do you know about it?" And I'm just like, "Well, I mean, you got to have an Xbox to play it. I would either go
potato
will not play it.
So true.
You either need an Xbox or a Xbox or PC, And I was just like, yeah, you could go for the S or the X. If you want to save money, go the S route. But if you want more bang for your buck, get the X. And they're like, oh, okay, I'll check that out maybe. And one of my coworkers was just like, hey, I'm getting an Xbox because I want to play this game.
That's awesome.
See? It's literally right there.
So first-hand experience.
So what the story was, the head is from Dot Esports. Starfield is a console seller. Xbox sales jumped massively on its launch. So here's how big it was. As highlighted by GameIndustry.biz, GfK data revealed that sales of the two current-gen Xbox consoles, the Series X and the Series X, increased by 76% week-on-week for the week ending September 2nd. That results in the best week so far for Xbox sales in the UK in 2023, with the following week ending September 9th currently standing as the second best week for the year. And Starfield is the clear and utter point of that.
Mm-hmm.
So would you guys say that the Bethesda purchase may have actually been reasonable for Xbox?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And it'll continue to pay dividends.
Without a doubt.
Yes. Going forward, because if this is just Starfield, wait until the next Elder Scrolls comes out. Wait until the next Fallout game comes out. It's just Bethesda has proven itself such a massive track record that no matter people's opinion on Starfield, whether it's mixed or whatever, you cannot deny the fact that this isn't an absolute amazing, massive game.
It is a masterpiece
in gameplay creation.
Yeah,
and it was hyped up for so long too, which helped drive the sales.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is something Xbox needed to win because you know the disaster of Redfall. That was supposed to be the big game of the summer. That flopped. I think this is the win Xbox needed because now that Microsoft, Xbox, specifically Phil Spencer, knows, hey, here's how we can be successful. Feel free to delay a game. Feel free to make sure it is 100% ready before it comes out. Build that hype. Build that anticipation. You have the next Forza Motorsport coming out next month, which is going to be a game of service. We have Fable waiting in the wings. We have so many of these next-gen games coming out that I think that Starfield was a really pivotal time for this. It's basically telling everybody, yo, Xbox is here, and we're not here to play.
Yeah, we're here to game.
We're here to game. Chew bubblegum and take names, and I'm all out of bubblegum.
That's right.
And to kind of follow that point too, Devin, with those games that you just listed of, you know, waiting in the wings, so to speak, I think, and this might be a hot take, I don't know. I do think once Baldur's Gate 3 comes to Xbox, I think that will drive even more sales because Baldur's Gate is now the number one highest rated game.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. Of all time.
It is so highly rated that even though it's I think it's turn-based.
It is.
Even though it's turn-based, even I am considering picking it up when it comes.
So, it's basically, yes, it's like quote-unquote turn-based, but there's so much strategy involved because it's basically digital D&D.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That's essentially what it is, and 100%. It is so freaking popular. It's unreal.
Unreal Engine.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's not.
No, it's not.
No.
So we talk about a game that is a console seller in Starfield. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about a company that apparently is not a console seller, and let's talk about Square Enix. Welcome.
You might even argue that it's a console killer.
So, or we might be able to say that this might be Square Enix's final fantasy.
That's
not gonna happen.
I agree.
No, they're gonna keep releasing these forever.
No, because we already know that Final Fantasy VII Remake Volume 2 is waiting to be released
on two separate discs, like it's the movie Titanic.
Yep.
But no, so what we're talking about here is everybody remembers Final Fantasy 16. Even I played the demo on PS5.
It's a solid game, honestly, from what I understand.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I actually had said that if I was going to buy any Final Fantasy, it probably would be Final Fantasy 16. I said it was a fantastic game and the time that I got opportunity to play with it. But I will say, Final Fantasy 16 is exclusive to PS5. I think PS5 mm-hmm. Is it on PC?
No, not to my knowledge.
It may not be on it right now, but I think it's supposed to come to it.
Yeah, I think it is supposed to be coming to PC, but it was not initially released. When Final Fantasy 16 came out, it was only going to be on PS5, a PS5 exclusive, which is fine. That is nothing wrong with that. Within, I believe, the first month they sold 3 million copies.
Mm-hmm.
And someone asked Square, they said, hey, is this good? And Square said, oh yeah, it's fine. And then it comes out today. Off the top of your guys' head, how much do you think Square Enix lost in valuation since Final Fantasy 16 was released in June?
I mean, I already know the answer to this, so...
I do too, so I can't remember.
All right, so, listeners, Square Enix lost nearly $2 billion in value since Final Fantasy 16. And the question is, can they possibly recover from this?
So,
They can.
Yes.
They can. Yes, they can. And they will.
So here's what happened. Square, on release, initially was a PlayStation exclusive, right? Then they were like, mm-hmm. okay, let's broaden our, what do they call it? Broaden my...
Like Horizons?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, let's go with Horizons. Let's broaden my Horizons. Let's give Nintendo a little bit of this. Let's give Xbox a little of this. Let's give PC a little sprinkle in there. So Square was cooking in everyone's kitchen. But then mm-hmm. they started to get weird, and where they started making exclusive deals with, like, for certain games to only go to some platforms. And then, mm-hmm. like, when you start doing that, when you've grown to be as big as you are being Square Enix, you're going to hurt your revenue. Like, you're taking in a smaller audience. Like, I just looked it up. Yeah, the 16 port isn't until sometime next year. We don't even have a solid release date. And 16's been out on PlayStation 5 for who knows how long.
And the MMO isn't coming out on Xbox till 2024 at some point. I believe October.
Yeah. So, like, they, Square, you have to, like, because of how big you grew, you have to just release your stuff on everything. It's really that simple. You'll fix mm-hmm. your revenue by just doing that.
Especially if you're making these large AAA games every 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Final Fantasy 16 was expensive to make.
Exactly.
It was, and the Final Fantasy before that was expensive to make, and the one before that was expensive to make. Final Fantasy 7 is expensive to make.
Mm-hmm.
And with the new CEO, the new CEO has actually said what they're planning on doing. So their shares of the company plummeted about 30%. And so what they're planning on doing is that Square Enix has a new CEO, Takashi Kiryu, who intends to reduce the number of smaller games in the works to focus exclusively on big budget games that have a greater chance of making an impact on the company's bottom line. Okay, now there is nothing wrong with that. There is nothing wrong with that at all. However, do you guys remember a game called Marvel's Avengers?
Yes. Yep.
Gone.
Wasn't that supposed to be a big AAA game?
Yep.
Didn't that one not sell to the way that Square Enix was expecting?
Yeah, you can get it now for like $3 or something like that.
And there was another big game that released this year that was supposed to be Square Enix's bread and butter called Forspoken.
Yes, and we all know how that went.
Another AAA game that was supposed to be the saving grace, and it wasn't the saving grace.
Again, that was another exclusive to PlayStation and PC.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that tell you? This is my problem with a lot of these gaming guys. I don't mean to go on the rant here. There is nobody in the room asking questions. No one is looking at the data and says, okay, so all the games that we released on a particular console exclusively, they did bad. So maybe we shouldn't keep doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. I kind of sound like an idiot at the way if you listen to like what I just said, like just a couple minutes ago, that like they need to release everything right on all platforms. But then I said the Bethesda deal was great for Xbox. And that's because Bethesda, you know, the games that they make and you know mm-hmm. that they make those like top tier RPG like worlds with mm-hmm. just great dialogue, right?
They have they have a pedigree behind them.
Yes.
Even more so, maybe Yeah, I would say more so than Square.
Yeah, I would say I would expect a Square game to flop a lot sooner than I would ever expect a Bethesda game to flop.
100%.
Because 100%. I can't think of a Bethesda game off the top of my head at the moment that is considered a flop.
Fallout 76 on release was really bad.
Fallout 76.
Yeah.
But they did fix it. It is now a good game.
That is true. I forgot about 76.
Yeah, but that's like the only one I can actually think of. Like out of their whole catalog. That's their the only one that I can actually think of.
I'm going to have a comment, and I'm going to have to differentiate the difference between Square and Bethesda. Square will release 2 or 3 games a year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bethesda will release
a game once every 5. And then in that 5, it'll be Skyrim.
You'll get Skyrim. This is the console edition. This is the remastered console edition.
The Nintendo Switch OLED Game of the Year port.
Yeah. This is the mobile edition for Skyrim.
Mobile edition. Elder Scrolls Skyrim Mobile.
Oh my God. We're predicting the future here, boys. I'm calling it now. Elder Scrolls is coming to mobile.
No, I'm calling it now. Starfield is going to be getting a DLC, and it's going to be Skyrim based.
Yes.
It'll be $4.99.
Yep. Fos ro da.
Real quick before we move on to our next story. Good luck, Square. I don't know what to tell you. You do better. But real quick, Rockstar has announced that they only plan on releasing one game in the next decade, and that is going to be Grand Theft Auto. They have zero intentions of doing a Red Dead Redemption 3.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yeah, I'd rather have Red Dead Redemption.
Speaking of GTA, I hear rumors stirring that GTA 6 is in pretty good progress.
Ooh. All right, well, good.
I hear some spicy rumors about this. Not confirmed, but I hear rumors on the interwebs.
Now that Starfield has came out, isn't Grand Theft Auto now the next biggest game everybody's waiting on?
Yes? Question mark? Maybe?
Well, I'm waiting on Fable.
Yeah, I mean, Fable is probably what I'm most excited for.
Spider-Man. Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, Spider-Man.
Spider-Man 2, okay.
Yeah.
That's I think that's about it.
The game we got a teaser for and never heard from ever again.
Yep.
It'll be here eventually.
Black and White 2, we got a trailer for and never heard from again.
Yeah.
All right, but let's go ahead. Let's finish up our last two stories. And this one has to go. We're talking about some TV show that I have yet to watch that you two are familiar with.
Yes. So we're going to be talking very briefly about the live action One Piece TV show on, Netflix. And I will say I was pleasantly surprised.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
I walked into it with literally like zero expectation because we all know Netflix's history when it comes to live action anime content that's not too good, unfortunately. The only exception that I can think of that they have on their platform is the live action Japanese Rurouni Kenshin, but that wasn't developed specifically like for Netflix.
Oh, okay.
But it's on it's on their platform, but that live action movie, which it's not a TV series, it's 3 live action films. They're extremely good. Highly recommend checking those out. And then the other ones, in terms of English live action for anime, I would say like Alita Battle Angel.
Yeah.
Oh, that was great.
I thought that was really stellar.
Yeah.
Other than that, I can't really think of like a solid live action English anime adaptation, because we know that, in my opinion, Death Note sucked. I thought it was awful. The only redeeming quality was William Dafoe as Ryuk.
William Dafoe can do any role and be fine.
Yes. He carried that show. other than that, like, live action Avatar sucked, live action Full Metal Alchemist, live action Bleach, what else?
But I will say real quick, I will say that Netflix has a tendency to do better on the TV shows than they do with the movies.
Cowboy Bebop, unfortunately, didn't do well for live-action anime adaptation. It was a bit of a bummer because I thought the casting was pretty good. But, yeah, Netflix and their One Piece was a knockout in the basically fighting ring, if you want to call it that. I think the fact that Oda, the creator of One Piece, was directly involved, I think that had a lot to do with it.
Yeah. You confirmed before we started this podcast that it got confirmed for season two.
Yes.
And Oda has said that he wants to do about 12 seasons of it.
Yes, I heard that as well.
And this was what I was going to say. Netflix does not know the Pandora's box.
It just that they opened. Because people... All right, so the One Piece are stans for their content.
Yes, they are.
Especially if you make it competently and good. I guarantee you, if this live action was bad, I guarantee you the fan base would have been like, nope, fuck you.
Yeah, delete it.
You look at Resident Evil.
Yeah,
they canceled after first season.
Yep, they will burn you at the stake. But since you were very, I would say, faithful to the series, both manga and anime form, you won a lot of points with the fan base.
Yep.
I do not think in any capacity this show is going to get 12 seasons.
I really hope it does.
I think at most it'll get 6.
I think at most it'll get 4.
Okay.
At the very most. Because here's the problem with Netflix. Netflix will have a hitter of a show. Absolute hitter of a show.
And then cancel it.
But the second they see that price tag,
it's
out. They are like, we're done. We are done. They had a show called, Something 8, Secret 8 or something like that.
Sense8?
Sense8. They had a show Sense8.
That was really good.
The most expensive show on TV at the time because they were shooting it all on location. Canceled it.
It was so
Marco
good.
Polo, most expensive show at the time. Canceled it. There was another hip-hop show. Saw the price, canceled it. Netflix will see this price, and once it reaches $100 million to cost per episode, they will absolutely get rid of it.
Well, and I don't think it'll reach that
problem.
Because the full live-action show of One Piece, first season, cost them $100 million.
Okay, then the second season is going to cost them $100 million per episode.
Which is relatively inexpensive. My only concern, I guess, for season two is how they're going to accomplish this character called Chopper.
I do not know how they're going to do Chopper.
I think what they'll do is do what they did with Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh God, bully a studio until he takes them.
No. That's not what I mean. What I mean is they'll make Chopper look like how they made the improved Sonic look. That's what I mean. I think he'll be CG or a Muppet.
Okay.
I hope he's a Muppet. I hope it's like an actual Muppet and like they just don't ever like say anything.
Mm-hmm. No, he's a very prominent character. Yeah, he's a very prominent character. So I think either Muppet or CG is a way to go with him. But in regards to like the season one of One Piece, I thought the casting was great. The soundtrack was absolutely just dynamite. I thought the soundtrack was a 10 out of 10. I thought the practical effects were amazing. They had real pirate ships, real.
Oh, wow. I might need to check this out.
Cool.
What else did they do? The actor who played Sanji took real cooking classes and actually did his own stunts. A lot of the actors did their own stunts, which is awesome. And yeah, just the choreography was great. There was a bit of a clunkiness in terms of storytelling. But overall, I mean, it was a very solid show. I would 100% give it like a solid like 8 out of 10 in our uninformed gamer score.
ice. That's what I like to hear.
All right. what do you think, Chris?
Solid 9 for me. You know me, I'll take any One Piece content I can get.
This guy. All right, well, I have no opinion because I haven't seen it, but I'll watch it this weekend on my flights, and I'll have an update for you guys next week. And we're going to bring you one last story real quick, and this story is if you are in Las Vegas,
yes,
you are staying at an MGM resort or a Caesar resort, good luck, because both MGM as well as Caesar have had massive cyber attacks against them. Caesar paid out to the tune of, I think it was $30 million to get their computers back online. MGM has not gotten their computers back online after 5 days. And it is so bad that people who are staying in MGM resorts, if you're staying in a hotel room, your key card does not even work. Security has to escort you to your room and unlock the door. You cannot turn on the lights. You cannot open the blinds. And you can't even use the Wi-Fi. It is that bad. So good luck to MGM. Good luck to Caesar. But as of right now, MGM is still dealing with this problem. They are still offline.
That's crazy.
Oof.
So, yep. Oof. So cyber attacks have come through. They have been getting worse and worse. And now the casinos are paying out. That's like one of those like news stories. This week, the casino has finally decided to pay out. Cyber attackers have locked up their systems.
Jesus.
But all right, any final words before we close up here, guys?
None here.
The only thing that I have to say, probably next episode, we'll probably talk on the Nintendo Direct that happened today. We don't have enough time to cover that for this episode. But we might just touch on it for the next one. But that's about my final thoughts.
And we will also be talking about the PlayStation State of Play, which happened at the exact same time we were recording this. So as always, thank you all for joining us. If you like what we do here at the Uninformed Gamers page, be sure to like us on Twitter, because I refuse to call it X,
At
Uninformed Gamers. If you wish to communicate with us, reach out to us at our TikTok page, at Uninformed Gamers. And if you wish to race with me or play with me on Xbox, it's Darkness Tiger, and on PS5, it is Darkness Tiger 2. One day I will learn how to stream. Not today, though, because I can't. All right, guys, go ahead and give your sign-offs.
Yeah, and I'm Chameleon. You can find me on Twitter, at Chameleon Games.
And I have been Rad Dreams from Rad Dreams Review on YouTube, as well as Rad_Dreams on Twitch. And if we do end up striking at Ford, I will be diving full-on deep into streaming more video games. So look forward to that if I do.
All right. Thank you all for joining us. We will catch you next time. Bye.
Later.
Peace.